Ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. I thought today we would talk about starting a new space agency. There's a lesson I learned when I was probably, 19, 20 years old. Probably 19. Somewhere in there. Before the age of 21. I was working in the company SoftView, which invented TurboTax, what we used to call it, two other names, MacinTax and TaxView. It's like we were the... Other than MacinTax, that was pretty awesome. But everything was Mac in something back in the day. But we were just the... our leadership was just incredibly talented at creating the worst company and product names ever. But aside from all that, I had been working at this place since 1987 at the age of 18. I mean, I had just turned 18 maybe a couple months before. And I was a huge part of the... development of this product. And there was a shift because they had lost a couple million bucks. They laid us off. That's when I went off and became a video game artist professionally. And then, like a year goes by of that stuff, and then I end up coming back for a short stint back to the company. And they had hired some new folks, and so I'm watching some other new people come on board. And my boss, who is now still one of my very good friends in this world, had hired a couple of his... Well, actually hired one of his best friends, who's a genius, who invented... a big part of inventing DirectX libraries for Windows. He was just a badass coder. I mean, this guy was badass. I mean, there's... And he looked like a biker. That's the funny thing. He looks a little less like a biker today, but he's just... And he had a brother that looked just like him. I mean, he's just crazy. And so we had this little click, and when we first came together, somehow I had complained about something needing to be changed. And I'm a doer in the company, right? I was programming tons of the product, and I completely held down one of the platforms by myself, and I was programming tons of the state packages and drawing all the fonts and drawing stuff for the manuals. And it was just like you could do as much as you could do. They encouraged that. But somehow this guy, there's a point to me saying this story, this guy had heard only my complaints, not any of my fixes, and didn't have any knowledge of the history of my participation in the company, because he was brand new. He takes a look at my pimple face, I'm 20 or below, can't remember, I think I must have been just 20. But he probably rightfully assumed from my physical stature, he's too young to really know what the hell he's talking about. He's too young to have anything really to do with what makes this company tick, not knowing that I'd already spent 2.5 years helping to develop the product and so on and so forth, right? I actually, had that problem a lot when I was a kid. I mean, I was 18 years old in that company, and within 3 months, I had the engineers who were adults asking me where I graduated college because I had my high school ring on. It was a big, fat Jalston's ring, right? And I just looked at him, with my pizza face, and I just said, I'm 18. I haven't gone to college yet. And then they're all kind of like, what? How's this kid an engineer with us, So I tell you that story about my buddy. Because what ended up happening was he went to my other friend, my boss, and said, who is this kid? I don't like this kid. And my boss goes, why? And he's laughing, he's like, you have no idea what you're getting into here, but go ahead. And he's like, because he just complains. He just complains and he doesn't fix anything. I hate people like that. If you're going to complain, you better be a constructive criticism kind of guy and offer a solution. And of course, he's 100% correct. His only mistake was not being at the right place in the right time to hear the fact that I only come with complaints if I can fix them, usually. There's a lot of you who share this with me. It's like the second you find out something is messed up, you'll go into thinking mode before you even open your mouth. And the second you start to talk is in the moment you found out what could change. It's not the de facto, this is the only way it could be improved, but one thing that could change that would make it better. I do this all the time, everywhere I am. You know, I'll go to Disneyland. I'll be sitting there with my girlfriend looking around. I'll be like, you know what they need to do? It's like, boom, they need to change this. And it's interesting. Your friends can actually get a little annoyed with you doing that, and they can get addicted to you doing that. You know, they come to you and go, well, this sucks. What should we do? You know? And I think the solutions just come right out of the universe, quite frankly. So the reason why I mentioned that little story at the beginning of this, and I hope I didn't bore the shit out of you guys, you're like, too late, is that we complain about NASA, we complain about SpaceX and what we think they're doing, JPL and what we think they're doing, Jack Parsons Laboratory. We don't really in America, I think, know what the foreign agencies are doing in terms of participating in various space programs. We know there's supposedly a Chinese space station. There's definitely been Russian space stations, if they indeed exist up there. But now, what do we do to make a new space program? I think it might surprise some of you, and some of you will be right on board. But the more I have conversations with people about what they think NASA does, they may be completely convinced that NASA lies and have, you know, 100 references as to why they can and how they can prove that. But when I look at them and I go, okay, you're right. That's only half the equation. What do you think they're really doing? What do you think the moon missions were really about? And then you hear crickets half the time. Now, I've seen videos on YouTube with the answers to the things I'm proposing right now, but for some reason they don't get watched and people don't seem to know. There is still that fanboy element to people who know that they're doing fake things. You know, I interview Bart Sibrel, I was shocked to find out that he thinks that there's 3 space stations. I'm shocked to think that he doesn't know anything about, doesn't know enough about the Van Allen belts and how electromagnetic radiation comes out of a sphere to understand that the polar north and south is the most concentrated and deadly areas because either, you know, he just simply doesn't know and he's peddling the notion. He's heard the stories that Joe Rogan was told on Coast to Coast AM, the most factual show on the radio, that you can steer out of the top and the bottom. I mean, it's interesting how ignorance can be used against people and they don't realize it. You know, there's this thing again, you know, I know enough to know that you're fake, but I will not concede that I do not know enough to know what's real. So the idea is, well, how would you know what's real and what's fake if you don't have a scientific background enough to know? Now, in some cases, in Bart's case, he saw footage that was just absolutely unequivocally fake. You know? And I think one thing that he was struggling to say in the interview was that he was trying to talk about time and things, and it's like this. No. What they told everyone in Apollo 11 was they couldn't bring up an extra paperclip because the weight of everything was so incredibly balanced. So if he's being criticized that the fake footage of the Earth through the portal window is indeed rehearsed, then bringing up black lights and a bunch of other gels and all this other stuff, it's a weight issue, if nothing else. But then again, the next mission, they took a 700-pound fucking Chrysler with them, right? They may indeed have more than one space station if we can achieve low orbit, which I think we can. I think he's absolutely correct. The tuna can that Buzz Aldrin was seen spinning in the footage from Apollo 11. Yeah. It is weird that the Apollo capsule, the pointy tip part, has been put in computer simulations in the last 5 years, and they found out that there's nothing about it that would maintain integrity re-entering the atmosphere. But then again, maybe the whole thing about you know, going 17,000 miles an hour and hitting thick oxygen and turning into a burn plate and all this other stuff. Maybe that's just a ruse because they need to cut radio communication as part of the hoax. Who knows? The space shuttle had tiles on it, and for the first, I don't know, Jesus, five missions, that thing came down with tiles missing. But maybe, again, that's not, maybe that has nothing to do with burning. Maybe that just has to do with going really fast and then going really slow. Who knows, man? But this question in this episode has really nothing to do with what they've claimed to have done. Nothing. Now, it took me a long time to come up with this this opinion. And it was pushed really heavily by someone, a friend of mine, who just watched a video and then told me about it, and I never actually found the original video. It was one of these things where it's like, really? Put that video on. Okay. Can't find it. It's weird how that happens. So NASA in the 60s reveals a little bit about sort of how NASA got off, well, it was formed and then it was immediately off track, right? As you all know, NASA was formed out of a bunch of Nazis that were smuggled from Germany to the United States through Operation Paperclip, courtesy of the Dulles brothers. Yes, Dulles Airport's named after them. It's funny how these fucking heroes are, you know, of evil are all over the names of our stuff, right? Well, let's just say that some pretty interesting changes happened in 2018 and the following years, and we actually reset the world. And so we need to rebuild the space agency to get this going. And so then we need to know kind of what was NASA all about. Wernher von Braun wanted to play with rockets. He's really just a little kid in a big guy's body. He built the V1 rockets, the V2 rockets, which bombed the living shit out of several opponents during World War II, most namely England. Again, if you go to England, as I understand it, there's still neighborhoods with, you know, tracts of homes, and there'll be one missing. And that's where a V1 or V2 rocket landed and blew the shit out of a house. And instead of building it up, they just plotted it over. Now, in 2018, I don't know if that's still true because real estate's very cramped over there. If you've, just a little slight digression. If you've never been to England and you live in America, I will say that when you're landing at Heathrow Airport on that island, it is like landing in some video game of the most plush, manicured farmland you've ever seen in your life. Because it's just, they only have that land. And so everything is manicured. There's not a bush out of place. There's not a tree out of place. When they zone something for residential, they build it, but they have certain building codes, and, you know, it's just amazing. It's an amazing lived-in place. You'll have an apartment track of, like, brownstone buildings that are, like, 800 years old or something. I mean, it's just, it's really a remarkable thing to witness. But back to NASA. So you have a bunch of war criminals coming over and forming a space agency. The other world criminals went off and created the clowns, right? With a bunch of mind manipulation stuff, right? But immediately, we have a situation. We had World War II, and then we had this nuclear bomb scare, the Cold War of the 50s. For those of you that didn't grow up in it, like me, you have to understand that kids were terrified. It was all bullshit. Duck and cover was bullshit, but they believed that they were going to die in a nuclear war. That's how bad the propaganda was. And because we were so innocent back in that day, back in those days, people believed it. We would never fall for it today. Now, so you have a bunch of military people all of a sudden changing their heart. And by the time Kennedy announces at his speech that we're going to go to the moon within this decade, send a man there and come back safely, it has created this vision that the peace is here, right? You had a nuclear, you know, post-World War II nuclear era. Everyone thinks is the atomic era. You know, we think everything's going to go up in a mushroom cloud, and all of a sudden now we're going to the moon, which was a beautiful change in the mindset of the people, even of the world. But the interesting thing was is that the whole thing was led by Russia putting up a satellite called Sputnik, right? Sputnik. And there's people that debate even the validity of that actually happening. The problem with that not being real was that it went around the Earth and we were able to listen to it as it went by. It's so high and it's going so fast that there isn't a vehicle that's been invented that could do that, except for something that's been thrown into low orbit. So that's where our scientists went. Holy crap. They're starting to dominate the lower atmosphere, lower orbital atmosphere. What will happen next? I mean, the Ruskies don't really, at the time, with Khrushchev, they were threatening the complete demise of the Western culture. And we just fought our asses off to get out from under tyranny, monarchy, and then socialism kind of blew up with Marxism, which is the globalists' other technique of bait and switch, right? So we had to energize our nation to get into rocket building with really a military objective, but veneer it with a space objective. Now, Wernher von Braun, you know, is said to have written several papers on getting to Mars. He was then forced to reevaluate to the moon. He wanted to leave Earth's gravitational pull. His theory was that we would have to build a space station in low orbit and then ferry tons of fuel up to the space station for storage and then build a rocket up there, grab the fuel and go outside of the Earth's atmosphere and slash gravitational pull. I still think that that's impossible. Like, if you don't have anything to push off of, you're not going to be achieving, you know, escape velocity. So if you follow NASA's official history, we have all these, you know, missions into low orbit and rockets that just fell down on the tarmac and blew up, you know, unmanned rockets. And then eventually we start getting into low orbit. We start lying about going around the moon. It's unbelievably laughable at this point, but as far as a magic trick of lies and bullshit, they get an A+. They get an A+ for pulling the wool over the eyes of the American people and the rest of the world. But no sooner did the last moon mission complete in 1972 that the ICBM was introduced to the world. Not just an ICBM, but one that can be launched from a submarine out of like the pill container that goes out of a torpedo bay. And this, you know, the torpedo bay goes straight up to the surface, or not the bay, but the torpedo capsule goes straight up to the surface of the ocean, plops out. As soon as it senses that it's above water, it blows off the case, and then boom, this rocket takes off and starts going into low orbit, threatening the living shit out of the rest of the world. If it's coming out of a submarine, you don't need it to fly thousands of miles. You just bring the submarine right up to the coast of the country you want to threaten. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Right? So what's interesting about that, because this video of this, I don't think it was a Trident submarine, but something very similar, this nuclear-capable submarine, firing this ICBM out of the water, which was very famous when I was a kid. You see that, and you don't think about the fact that that had to be developed. It had to be weaponized. It had to be put inside some, again, submarine delivery system. And it's not just submarines. There's missile silos all over the Midwest. If you go to Wichita, Kansas, and you pay attention as you're driving into town, or you do a big 360 around Wichita, Kansas, there are cement bunkers all over the place that are just 10 feet off the ground. It's because down inside there are a ton of nuclear weapons. NASA was developing a foo-foo public exhibition of rocketry system, which was very real. But what they were really doing is developing military delivery systems for missiles. I think everybody missed it. How many times did you see the space shuttle go up and everyone's watching the launch? It's really awesome on television. And when it gets to the point where they're supposed to film what they're putting out in space, they say, oh, in this particular mission, we can't show you because it's fucking military, which is a clown organization satellite system, right? In my memory, it's somewhere around 2/3 to 3/4 of all of the space shuttle's missions were military based. But nobody really talks about it. They're just kind of like, oh, okay. And then the brain goes into kind of cognitive dissonance, you know, about the whole thing. Well, I'm going to stop thinking about it. I'm going to stop thinking about the space shuttle entirely until I hear that it's landing. And then maybe I'll get up at 6 a.m. to watch it on TV. And why go through that in this particular episode? And the reason why is that if we're going to build a new space agency, we have to unplug the military from a real space program. And the reason why they've been attached to each other is because the government knows that as soon as that you think about your tax dollars paying for a missile system, you're going to hesitate. When you think about going to Mars and building a space station on the moon, well, shit, there's movies and television shows that make you want to do that. So that's easily acceptable. You'll fund that at $60 million a day. Elon Musk, CEO of SpaceX. They have worked really hard to make you accept this man as a hero by putting him on dozens of television shows and movies. Subliminally putting him in movies as the guy that opens the door to a limousine, which you didn't notice. He's familiar to you, even though he is an awkward dude, man. Cannot present on a stage to save his soul, right? Why are you nervous, dude? Are you peddling something that's real, or are you peddling something that's fake? But he does stunts to make you think positively of the company. Again, it's like Bill Clinton playing a saxophone on stage on Arsenio Hall in the mid-90s or the early 90s so he could become president. He looks cool compared to all the stiffs, right? You don't know, he's already raped 30 women. God knows what the fuck he did on Lolita Island, right? With his nearly 30 trips that we know of. And that's what we know of, right? The guy had a private jet. He could have been there 100 goddamn times, right? But Elon Musk is in that territory. They're pulling off a space agency off to the side. Okay. Well, it's a separate ledger line, right? That's a separate expense. So $60 million a day to the group that's supposed to be doing everything that Elon Musk is doing. But now we're going to pull off another ledger and create more expense to the American people to pay this side company because NASA can't do what supposedly SpaceX can. You know, it would be like hiring a maid to clean your house, and they don't clean your house very well. So you hire another maid, or your maid, you know, yeah, you hire another maid with your money, not with your maid's money, to clean your house. That's what's going on right in front of your face. It's insane. So I think that the space program has to be split in two. I mean, all the players right now have to be shut down. I would almost say we need to do a full investigation of the entire history of NASA, all of their lies, all their manipulation, as Bart Sibrel said. During their era, it was a felony to use propaganda on television. It was a felony to lie on television. Believe it or not. So you review the whole agency, find out where the criminals are, send them off to Gitmo, send them off to Leavenworth. And anybody who wants to continue working would have to really work hard to get the certification to work in the new space program. I would say none of them should be hired into the new space program, but problem is you do have a lot of valuable PhDs. Problem is once a shill, always a shill, right? So you can't take a risk. They'll pay someone off again to smuggle information out. You know, it's funny how corporations have no problem keeping their next product from being announced. You know, any of that leaking out of Apple computer, those are all intentional leaks to create some, you know, buzz for the next piece of shit phone they're going to be creating, right? But if you want to keep it locked down, you can keep it locked down. So we have a military space program. Let's just acknowledge it. Stop messing around. And then we have a private citizen space program for two things. For exploration and for the survivability of mankind. The military can inherit those programs which are related to protecting the world. A meteorite, right? But I'm going to tell you right now, I differ very much with my new acquaintance, Bart Sibrel, in that I do not believe that, as I've said in my NASA Selling Doom episode, I don't believe for a second that we're ever in any threat of a solar flare, right? The fact that anyone would peddle that shit bothers me, right? You think that a couple weeks ago we almost fucking died to a solar flare? Okay, okay. So you think that this is something that mechanically takes place? And for the, I don't know, a million fucking years before today, it never happened? And you think it's going to happen on your watch? Why? Because you're special? Like I said, we have never had in recorded history a hemisphere of the world get burned up by some goddamn solar flare. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're indigenously living there again, and there's no marks on the ground, and trees and flowers and birds came back, worms crawl on the ground. It's complete bullshit, okay? The problem in me saying that is that in the HARP antenna patents that were filed in 1958 by Bernard Easton, I guess his name, or Easton, excuse me, they do have a technique of modulating the upper ionosphere and controlling its distance from the surface of the Earth, theoretically. Okay. So if they wanted to do something nasty, they could resonate it, basically grab onto it and yank it down to the surface of the Earth, and you could have all kinds of crazy things happen. It wouldn't get hot. It would get cold as fuck. And that's what that one movie was based on, is that the atmosphere was, you know, wobbling down and touching Earth, and then everything froze instantaneously, right? This is part of cleaning up the world, though. But this episode is based on the fact that we regain control. The QAnon's right. That all of those who need to fall, fall. And then again, what do? We have to build it back up. Well, the new space program would have to start from scratch. And I mean from scratch. We get the most brilliant people on planet Earth who have no previous association with globalists, with government, with clowns. I mean, we do a colonoscopy on their past. You want to be a part of this leadership force of this space program? We are going into your past. You will take drugs and you will be surrounded by a council of people who ask you 100 questions to make sure that you don't have any weird alliances to someone or some skeletons up your butt. We need the most amazing, beautiful people in the world. And, you know, ladies, get your science books out, because this is your chance to prove yourself and get this thing going, right? But the problem with the space program today is that it's built on outdated theories of electricity, outdated theories of propulsion, and we're being held down by the globalists so that we don't create better forms of energy, zero-point energy systems. We have been forced to get rid of all of our knowledge about anti-gravity systems. We don't study it, right? How many times have you seen a special on the internet about NASA's anti-gravity department? It doesn't exist, does it? It doesn't exist because we're never to find out how that works. Where have you seen the... But where's the documentaries on Netflix about the zero-point energy programs around the world? No government's looking for it. I have friends that are very associated with very special people in the world, and they say that we are 50 years past zero-point energy systems. That not only do we have zero-point energy systems that run military operations, but that we're like 4 or 5 generations down the line. So our new organization is going to be based on absolute technology that has been kept from us forever. Instead of trying to build big fuel rockets, we're going to try to build anti-gravity system is based on a propulsion system that is based on infinite power. Hey, and I'm not saying that we can just drive through the Van Allen Belt simply because we might achieve zero gravity. Because we can achieve a zero-point energy system. Meaning no fuel goes in the thing at all. It just simply creates infinite energy. Now, with this technology, we have responsibilities. And this is probably some of the bad thinking that's been going on for years, or maybe good thinking, that if, let's just say, NASA creates, or the military creates, because it's the same goddamn place, a zero-point energy system. We know that the population of the world exploded when energy became abundant, especially oil. Oil allowed us to invent a lot of transportation. Once we're able to go from our condensed population of Europe, which can't sustain more people easily, and we go to this open territory all over the world, you know, America's being one, obviously Native Americans were already here, but Native Americans hadn't, to my knowledge, overpopulated much. There we go. We can take over the whole continent with our military and procreate like crazy, use railroads to get all over the land so we can take all the resources and sell them and take all the money and ship it back to the Rothschilds, right? So if we did create these energy systems and these zero gravity systems, the traditional method of NASA is to say it's paid for by tax dollars, therefore everything that they create with that money is public domain. There's a car that was invented by, I think, the Holley carburetor dude called the Vector. Hope I have the inventor right. And some of you guys will know right off the bat, the Vector was this crazy car. I mean, it looked like the precursor to the Lamborghini, the Countach. It's like a 10-foot-wide car. I mean, it's just a tremendously wild-looking car. But it was built using a bunch of aerodynamics from NASA. The hood of the car had these fins that would come up and down based on how fast the car was going to keep it down to the ground, because it supposedly had a top speed of 240 miles an hour. I'm not sure a Vector ever went 240 miles an hour. They said they didn't have tires to keep it on the ground at 240. Whatever. So in setting up this organization, we have to decide whether or not the technology that's being invented can be put in the public domain. It can be disclosed in the public domain. Perhaps it is created in some sort of black box system where you're not allowed to disassemble it, or we somehow obfuscate its creation. We have to be careful. If an anti-gravity engine were to be stolen, for instance, and given to someone who's trying to bomb the world, they might have a bit of a problem. So before this technology is introduced into the system, this brand new corporation, this brand new government organization, we have to figure out what we're trying to do, what is our objective, and what are the policies around that. There's a bunch of you that are sick and fucking tired of hearing it's a matter of national security. That's the way they've been hiding pedophiles around the world, right? That's how they hide money laundering. And again, there was a Star Trek episode with Picard where someone had said that. Matter of national security, something to that effect in the script. And unbeknownst to me, the writer who wrote Picard's dialogue, he quoted something from, God, several hundred years ago in American history, even from our time frame, he's supposed to be in the 24th century. And he said, oh, that's the old axiom, isn't it? That you can hide behind this notion of national security. How convenient for you. And obviously he's right. So we have to be careful about creating more of this bullshit. Because the second you can hide something formally in a government organization is the second you facilitate a mechanism for corruption. So the definition of national security, instead of being this nebulous thing, right? How do we know that something is really a matter of national security? I'm willing to bet, even though I've never heard this rumor to exist, or I've never seen anything that remotely approaches this, that there could be a checklist created, right? Some bill of rights that would say this determines if something is a matter of national threat. I mean, I know there are documentation things for the top secret emails. But there should be something where we can all say, it's sort of like Asimov's rules of, you know, engagement for a robot, right? We can say, this technology, if in the wrong hands, could facilitate weaponry that would be tough to control after it is equipped properly, right? But we have to figure out a way to get to modern technology. When you deal with unions and various functions, it's a very interesting process. You know, when I told you guys that I was briefed by my friends from NASA that said we didn't go to the moon, okay, the reason why we're having the conversation is that we were at a trade center, a trade show, and we were not allowed to plug our machines in out in the front room, and so we went and took lunch break because we had everything set up and we're just waiting for the union electrician guy to come in to plug a goddamn computer in the ground. Well, imagine that lunacy taken to a non-lunacy mechanism, whereby the propulsion systems that might be dangerous to have in the enemy's hands are black boxed by the military side of the equation, and you build your rocket or whatever, your ship, to do some scientific thing on the public side of things with all of your experimentation. Maybe you have your moon base equipment ready to go for the very first moon landing, and the military comes in and installs the propulsion system in a way that you can't open it up. And the second that they release the engine to you and put it on that system, it is then monitored for its entire duration, its entire journey. And so it goes to the moon, it lands, you do your mission. If you can, you come back. If it has to stay on the moon, then it self-destructs. And the military's figured out a way to make it self-destruct in a way that if you were to find it and look at it, you wouldn't know what the hell you're looking at. This would be a clump of metal. So it might be a way to quarantine dangerous technology. The zero-point energy system, I'm sure, would be inside of a system that provides anti-gravity. So it's all in one shot. In terms of getting through Van Allen belts, well, I think everyone could share that information. I think that the Van Allen belts provides, well, we all know it provides infinite electricity, as we've defined it as electromagnetic wave that can, you know, provide a rotational valence current on something. It has so much that it'd be interesting to see if we could harvest that interaction with the Van Allen belts to create a propulsion system to at least harvest the energy while we're in it. But if nothing else, we need to deflect it off of us and control it. So if it has a million times more power than we need to run our ship, then we have to make sure it doesn't consume us. It doesn't pass through our ship and bake us like an astronaut in a microwave, right? But there's radiation in space. Once you get past the Van Allen belts, the radiation in space is super lethal. Another problem with the moon missions. So once you're outside the Van Allen belts, it's lethal. And again, for those of you who want to debate NASA accomplishing anything, I will say that one of the legitimate programs in NASA in the mid-80s was trying to figure out how to insulate astronauts against ambient sun radiation. Not a solar flare, just regular ambient radiation from the sun. And again, the gentleman I talked to that day in 1991, he said very humbly, he said, well, the only thing we could possibly come up with is to ferry water up to a space station and then fill a capsule with 6 inches of water around the hole in some fish tank. He goes, that's the only thing we could possibly think of. And again, that's not Van Allen belt protection and that's not flare protection. That's just ambient radiation protection. So we need something that is absolute, not something that's going to only work in a certain condition. Now, if, I think it's Michael Faraday, right? In the 1830s. If we can create a Faraday fabric around our ship, something that we weave together that is part of a material, then maybe, the Van Allen belts have enough of a unified frequency to behave literally like children behaving. The electrons can behave around the outer surface of a ship, and then with building certain mechanisms into the shape of the fabric, we could route electrons into engines to siphon off just what we need to create a propulsion system, perhaps an antimatter engine, if anyone can really explain to me how man creates antimatter. Because you hear these rumors about us creating antimatter, and the only thing we've actually got is you turn on machines, there's a lot of spickety sparks, and then someone says, oh my God, I think in the theory we created a couple particles of antimatter for a split second. You know, it's like, it's not like you have this, you know, tabletop engine that just creates antimatter in some, you know, glass bubble. So military. Let's take a look inside of a military organization for a second, because we have the military definitions as put down by things like Dr. Strangelove, right? Where the military is always wanting to launch the missiles and always kill everyone. Same thing with that Twilight Zone to Serve Man. As soon as aliens show up, it's a military operation, military operation. Tons of X-1s have the same thing. But if we're going to build a space program where we have damn near infinite capabilities, do you really need to beat everyone up? Really? Do you really need a world domination thing? If any of you have ever been on the playground, I got an episode coming up called The Playground Theory. You know, if you were a kid that grew up in my hometown, there's lots of these kids where they're 6 foot tall in sixth grade. So they're about 11 years old and they're 6 feet tall. You get your ignorant child who is raised by abusive parents. You get your kid out there who's beating everyone up because he's just drunk on his power. He's a big kid, right? And then you get your gentle giant. And the kid could beat up everyone, but he protects and settles everything down. He's a chieftain. There's women like this too. Well, hopefully with a rebuilt world where we start minding our own business and we get rid of globalists that create wars, right? Globalists incubate dissent for each country against itself, right? Globalists make Muslims look insane, make Christians look insane, make Jews look like they're all in some financial cabal, right? Eventually I'll do that episode. We're all being had, you know, right? Yeah, you can always find a weird person in your neighborhood that believes all the propaganda and thinks that they're the chosen ones and blah, 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 blah. You know, I mean chosen ones of any religion I just named, not just one. But in the modern Gene Roddenberry world, someone has to go first, right? Someone has to say, all right, well, we have enough technology now to police our world, our little, you know, the land that is our sovereign land. And if anyone gets out of control in some horrific way and tries to create genocide, we can peacefully take our technology over there and end the war without hurting a soul. Imagine a directed energy weapon that can get rid of steel and aluminum, or whatever the hell you want to do. It can get rid of ceramics. It can get rid of rubber. It can get rid of like red plastic all by itself. You can dial in these frequencies and hit it from space and it will simply atomize and go away. It might get really hot in your hand, just like the day the Earth stood still when the Klaatu zapped everyone's guns and people had to jump out of their tanks because it was melting. Now the ordinances would have probably gone off, but anyway. But yeah, imagine there's some genocide going on somewhere and it's even people throwing spears at each other and we just go over there and make wood disappear. And then we leave. Duke it out, guys. Duke it out. But in terms of our military, it's to keep the peace and protect. And so everything we develop in the military side of our space program is to preserve the peace, to prevent aggression, to not have war. I mean, imagine a military organization that's objective is to prevent war, not to get in it, not so that generals can look at, you know, Tomahawk missile videos and watch things blow up in the desert. You know, I'm going to at least say that most males get off on that. I've gotten off on that several times. There's like some, in fact, right now I'm getting off on it when Trump goes over and bombs all the opium farms in Afghanistan that the clowns control. It's pretty awesome, man. It's a financial artery being destroyed. Now, again, NASA up to this point has been developing delivery systems for weapons, which then are then, you know, the patents are spun off, you know, to Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and McDonnell Douglas and Boeing. They get the technology in there to weaponize it. They create stealth skunk work stuff, right? Patterson Air Force Base or Area 51 or whatever. It's easy for us to say it's all nefarious because we don't get to see what's being developed, right? We do now have declassified planes that we see. But instead of letting a military organization develop its own charter behind closed doors without the approval of the people, and again, there's a lot of great points about the people not knowing what they need, right? Every time a person charges for without asking the people, a lot of times great things happen because the people have been indoctrinated. But let's just say when I say the people, we say that is defined by our best thinkers. And maybe they have to think about it for a little while. And they come up with, again, some Bill of Rights, some declaration of what this organization would be about. I mean, I think it's pretty... And, you know, I do know that there are evil people in the world, and if we don't think like them, they will take advantage of us. They will win. So we have to have people that can neutralize the most evil thoughts in the world and the creations thereof, because they will always exist in our lifetime, right? But I'm going to let those contingencies be sort of backfilled through implication. I'm implying that those sorts of dark requirements are going to be taken care of. What I want to do in this episode is continue going down the line of the Gene Roddenberry approach, which is that we have decided to move towards the Star Trek realm of peace, of maybe even a moneyless society. Go see my episode on Star Trek in season one to get a whole hour and a half on that. But what do we want to do on the people side of the space program? Well, don't we want to figure out where the hell we are? You know, when this flat Earth stuff started going around, I think it's funny that NASA didn't, and the military, no one has helped us solve it once and for all, right? What do they have to do? They take Eric Dubé and whoever else wants to go. Isn't it Mark Sargent's one of them too? The most avid flat Earth supporters in this planet. You charter some beautiful plane, some G5 or something. And they're allowed to bring as many video cameras as they want, as many backup batteries as they want. They can fill up window after window in this plane. They can attach it to the outside of the plane, whatever needs to happen. And they simply fly the G5 up and over the South Pole, the Antarctica. And it's a continuous film shot. And they've got, you know, you need to have at least half a dozen flat Earth, pro flat Earth people on this plane filming. They also film the gyroscope in the center of the plane, in the cockpit. You know, and just a footnote, you know, I've always told you guys that if the gyroscope doesn't rotate as you fly from London to Cairo, then this world is flat. And I've been told several times on videos and on websites that it doesn't turn. What I have never seen is a photograph of the before and after, or a movie of the before and after. So right now, it's just a bunch of goddamn hearsay. Like, why would you say, like these guys will say, I'm a pilot and I've looked and it doesn't rotate. It's like, well, do you have a fucking cell phone, dude? Right? Take a goddamn picture, would you? But these are fun things that we could do with a space agency to essentially clear up all the confusion about where the hell we are. Let's clear up whether or not we're on a ball or on a flat plane or some goddamn matrix or something. Or maybe we're on a big giant ball that's so damn big that where we are, the curvature is really so teeny tiny that We barely see it. We barely notice it. Let's go 3,200 miles up in the sky in orbit. That'd be well within the Van Allen belts. But let's send some craft up there, unmanned, whatever, and see if the sun and the moon are right there, right? What if you go to the moon and it's 237,000 miles away? We can track it. You know, the sad part is that we don't have a rocket that's ever just gone up unmanned in the modern age with video cameras all over it. You know, there's always these blackout phases, this bullshit, you know. It doesn't matter if we lose communication with the rocket and the live feed goes away. The live feed can be made up the second the rocket actually makes contact back with us, if that blackout thing is really true. And it'll beam down the difference in the frames and just say, look, this is what I saw when you couldn't see. But as this rocket does its slingshot bullshit around the Earth and supposedly goes to the moon, the whole thing's on video. Every goddamn frame is on video. It doesn't have to be 4K. It'd be nice. It should have enough storage on the rocket to store that and transmit it at a later time. But it's possible, and we've never seen it. If we want to exist in space and travel out to other stars like Alpha Centauri, or even visit Mars with our feet, then there's a tremendous amount of science we have to understand, right? A tremendous amount. You know, SpaceX saying that they're going to go to Mars in the next half decade with a human being. It's just the most bold-faced lie you've ever heard in your life. We've sent, you know, supposedly cosmonauts up there for almost 2 years, and they come back and they can't walk. They've lost a tremendous amount of bone density. And we think that we created an exercise bike, and that's somehow just going to fix everything, right? The human body relies on gravity to work in pretty much, I would say, 90% of all of our organs. They're designed to have ethereal force pushing down on us all the way through our bodies. On levels that you don't think about, like the electron flow through our bodies, requires this force to work properly. So you can't all of a sudden put a human being in space for a prolonged period of time and just hope that's going to work itself out, right? You could have human beings sacrifice their lives to experiment and figure that out, but you can't just throw anyone up there and go, oh, well, you know, it's generally safe, right? But we have a rock, supposedly in space, that is really large, very close compared to all their celestial bodies. And like Bart said, we haven't been back to it since 1972. Supposedly, right? Now, we know that we've never been there, so we got to go. And again, if you watch my 100-Year Theory episode from this episode, you could theorize that we have all this technology that's been hidden from us, and, you know, maybe you're right. I don't know. Again, if they could get to the moon with covert technology, I guarantee you they would go up there and stage all of the landings, the 6 landings that we supposedly did. They'd put everything where it's supposed to be, dust off the footprints and stuff. You know, unless they find that this is completely goddamn impossible. Even if they get there, it's just so different than what they thought. It doesn't work. There'll never be photographs that match the fake sets that they built in the Hollywood basement. I guarantee you that's the case too, right? I forgot what listener put it up there, but total kudos to whoever did this. One of you posted a picture on the Locked Facebook group of the fact that the moon is so bright, you know, when it's full, that it lights the Earth in a big way. But when we go up there and land on it and take photographs, there's just, it's gray and dismal and tons of shadows, and it's just really funny. The gray dismal part is the real clincher. There's going to be shadows wherever you go, and we can see shadows on the moon surface with telescopes. I'm willing to bet the moon is something completely different than we think it is, and we should find out what that is. Maybe that's an objective. Do we want space stations? Is there any reason to have space stations, right? Military dominance, well, we know why we want that in the old thinking. Communication satellites, well, there's a rational thought for that, right? And again, for those of you that don't think satellites exist, If they don't, then yours truly has seen some amazing designs of things that are definitely satellites, and I don't know why someone would work so freaking hard designing these things and building these things if they're never going to actually go up and do anything, right? And I'm not talking about NASA things. You know, the guy that told me about the moon mission thing in 91, he'd been working on satellite technology for, God, 15 years. Had lots of patents related to the satellite technology, I'll just put it that way. I got another friend that spent 10 years in a covert program building satellite technology. And so, you know, I don't really think that the hoax would go so far as to have these people sit in rooms for decades with dozens of other people if we can't send something into low orbit. Again, the fake footage that's in a funny thing happened on the way to the moon, it's very real, right? Now, faking the tuna can in Buzz Aldrin's hands back in 1969 is tough. I mean, I know you guys think there's, you know, I know that there's the vomit rockets and that sort of thing. But if the footage is, if we can't go into low orbit and the footage in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon happened, then someone faked the fake. You know, it's just, it gets ludicrous at some point, right? The other thing that doesn't happen in the old space program, the existing space program, is the public opinion about what the hell we would like to fund. Would it be interesting if on some non-political interval, the people are presented a pitch about what NASA wants to do? We're not inventing the idea, right? You know, if Steve Jobs had come up with the iPod, and instead of debuting it for sale, it was 2001 or whatever it was, he simply showed you a prototype, showed you it working, showed you iTunes, and said, look, that's a legal way to buy music so that artists can make money. And this is a little device that holds 1,000 songs. If I could make this, would you buy it? Now, we know why that doesn't happen, because the competitors would move in and do it. But if he says, look, I got all the patents, I just got to really turn this on, would you please fund this? Everybody would. Everybody would, right? Same thing with NASA. No one can just rush out and do what NASA does. And we're not talking about the lack of protection for patents here and there, right? So they've got a black box, it's some propulsion system. They go, we have the X-1 propulsion system that has been developed. It uses a zero-point energy system. It's anti-gravity. It is in the military wing of our space program. It is now ready for use by the public side of the space program. And so they go, with this engine, with three of these engines inside this particular spaceship that we've designed, we believe we can get to low Earth or Earth orbit. We believe we can go through the Van Allen belts and everyone will be okay. Or we can at least run the Project Orion experiments to find out if this hole will protect a person inside without the person being inside there. Then we vote on it. And then when the rocket or the spaceship just takes off, right? It won't be a rocket, but it just takes off and goes in the air. The public goes, that's part of my decision. My tax dollars have built, you know, part of that ship, that rearview mirror. I paid for that. Right? When the blimp was invented formally in the 20th century, people would use it as a form of recreation, a form of transportation, a silent, beautiful ship that could float in the sky and you could look down on the population. You know, people ate 5-star meals up there. It was amazing. And only when the propellers turned on did you ever hear any sound. Okay, well, what if you could fly around the Earth? Do a little tour in a zero-gravity unit that has no sound at all. That'd be a fun piece of entertainment. And then Richard Branson can come in with Virgin and get all the right approval to use one of the propulsion systems. And he can tour his craft in this area, right? If it goes out of a certain area, then, you know, our propulsion system could be nabbed by an enemy. And so we prohibit that. We're destroying the world, right? By harvesting all of its minerals. Now, with something like oil, you have to dig it out of the ground every once in a while and do something with it, because the earth makes it as a natural byproduct of the earth. It's not a fossil fuel. So if we stopped drilling oil, there's a funny little thing that'll happen, in that it fills up all of the reserves again, and it starts spilling out the top. Like I've said in several episodes, you don't want your neighborhood full of oil, which is what it used to be in Texas, floating on the surface of the earth. So we're going to have to do something with that stuff. Not sure what you do with it, even if you're not going to use it. But we're digging, you know, copper and silver and gold and uranium and lithium and all kinds of stuff. You know, we're distilling it out of the ocean. We're just destroying the surface of this planet, because we have created dependencies and profit margins for the movement of these minerals. Well, if you didn't need it, you wouldn't do it, right? Think of all the ugly power plants that exist in the world. We have a Edison power plant down on the beach of Huntington Beach. It's ugly as sin, man. Why they don't find a way to put a veneer on this building to keep it looking pretty, I have no idea. But they never do. They just paint it sand gray so that it kind of blends in with the atmosphere, because it's against the sky. I don't understand how that works. It's like a big sandcastle. But imagine all these things go away. You don't have to pay for power anymore. Maybe there's a limited consumption that you can have in your house, so you can't build some sort of death ray or something. You get a limited amount. You get enough to run all of your appliances. You're cool. But you can't drag out a million volts for something. It's exciting to think about re-engineering what we do, isn't it? But hopefully you have found the underpinning theme of this episode, which is, isn't it interesting when you clear the slate and you acknowledge perhaps, you know, fantasy level technology being disclosed to the public, that all of a sudden what to do in space, it sort of flattens out, doesn't it? Oh, well, do we really just need to be in orbit in a space station? What use is that? Well, maybe study the weather. Maybe we can study more about the bowels of the earth and where the next volcano is going to happen, the next earthquake is going to happen. Yeah, maybe there's some nice geological, environmental programs that we can do. Perhaps we can figure out how to make a better metal by making it in space versus making it on the surface of the earth. But in the end, you're kind of like, well, I kind of like Earth. How about you? I kind of do. But I'm sure some people want to float in space, I guess, forever. It takes a long time to get from point A to point B. Maybe with some, again, antimatter machine or something that can, you know, warp the flow of ethereal winds, we can start creating very quick propulsion systems, and maybe we can get to Alpha Centauri, which is 4 light years away, right? Traveling at the speed of light, it would take 4 years to get there if what we've been told is true. Now, maybe it's untrue. Maybe they just faked all that data. Maybe everything's just right next to us, right? Maybe space doesn't exist. Maybe we're in a firmament dome. Who knows, man? I love the idea of 2001 A Space Odyssey because it's come up in my life a lot. A lot of my friends, my buddies is a writer, and we've been talking about it a lot. And I forget the beauty of what Arthur C. Clarke did, where he said, you know, in his story, the monolith was here on Earth, augmented man, then went to the moon and hid itself, such that when we get to the next journey, which is to get to the moon, we uncover the monolith there, and then it goes to Jupiter. And it's much bigger, and we have to get to Jupiter. It's always baiting us to get to the next level of technology. It's validated itself as something out of this world, and it goes there. Now, the one thing I found that was interesting was that it blatantly increases the intelligence of prehistoric man in an evolutionary model. I know that rubs some of you really bad. For me, it's just a story. But it teaches us how to turn bones into weapons, and to eat meat. Eating meat being the first one, which improves the brain and our visual cortex to get to the point where a weapon could be used to combat injustice. Once they found it on the moon, though, in the movie, I don't remember, there's a big whiny noise that happens and then it disappears as the astronauts, explorers touch it, which must not have been the very first time it was touched because the whole thing was excavated out beautifully. But these scientists go down and touch it, you know, and it whines in their ear, this horrible ringing noise, and then it's gone. But there was no sign in the storyline that they were augmented. I can't remember what the book said. I haven't read the book for 30 years, 35 years. One thing is for certain, and that is that we haven't mastered Earth, right? We haven't mastered being on this ball or this whatever. We are still acting like children. 2018's awakening? It is the first time in hundreds of years, okay, that man is behaving like an adult. Who is the resistance to this change? Our snowflakes. Those who act like children. Those who hate men of authority. Women of authority. They hate it. I got the heckling birds now. The reason why I opened this episode with my friend was that when he went to my boss and then came back to me. In fact, the way it first went was that he chewed me out in a cube and he said, "You're just going around complaining and you're not offering any solutions." And I'm looking at this guy going, what? Like, it was the first time anyone ever accused me of that in my life. And I'm looking at this guy going, you must not know who I am. I mean, I literally said to him, that's not me. I'm a programmer here. I solve all these problems. That's what I do. And he kind of stopped in the middle of the, he didn't apologize right away. He was kind of like taken off guard, like, oh shit, do I have this kid completely wrong? He was big enough to do that. And then he went off to talk to my boss, and then he came back, and he said, this is before we all became personal friends on the outside, and he came back and said something like, oh man, I'm sorry, I got you wrong, you know, I thought you were just complaining, and when so-and-so told me about who you were, I realized, you know, I thought I was bumping in. He said to me, the problem was in my last company, I had nothing but people who complained, and I thought I was running into another one. And I laughed and I was like, man, I totally know what you mean. I completely sympathize with your opinion because I have the same problem, you know. When we complain about our space program, that is not a bad thing. But we have to have the answers as to, okay, what do we do? Do we have a space program at all? What should it do? What's important, really? I would love to visit perhaps the celestial bodies in our solar system. Maybe if you could make it a really quick trip. I know this sounds naive or childish. If you could get me to Alpha Centauri and back within, I guess, 6 months to a year. I mean, the full round trip, I'd go. I personally, and this may shock you guys, I wouldn't want to lose my Earth time to a bunch of space exploration. It's just not my game. I love my fellow man. I love what we have here. I think we need to get this place right. Taking all of our intellectual flaws into space is going to do nothing more than pollute space. Prolong and delay what needs to actually occur here, right? Let me throw this little question at you at the very end of this episode. There's a lot of Trekkies. And let's just say we gather up all the Trekkies that worship the 1960 series all the way through to the end of Enterprise in 2005. They don't like the J.J. Abrams movies. They don't like the new horrible SJW series on TV. So we have a bunch of good people, and let's say they know all the episodes inside and out. When they go to a cosplay Star Trek convention, they have maybe two characters they play. Some of them play just one character. They're just Spock. They're just Captain Kirk. Whoever, right? Uhura. Counselor Troy. And we say, okay, these people have been utterly devoted to their Gene Roddenberry vision of the future. No money. Everyone works because that's what we do. We're responsible for each other. And we build some sort of Star Trek Enterprise because we have these propulsion systems now. And maybe we don't really need the nacelles because there really isn't a warp field and all this other stuff. But We can make it look any way we want because the propulsion system we've created can achieve what this Enterprise can. A deflector shield, maybe we can have lasers and torpedoes, you know, photon torpedoes. We can go to red alert. How about that? I'm willing to bet if you built a whole crew, and I forgot how many, the Enterprise changes size constantly, so I can't remember what any one of them can hold. But say we take a regiment of like 500 people, we put them in this spaceship, and we send them on a voyage. It's very similar to the charter of Star Trek, to explore new worlds. I'm willing to bet that if we took the most devout Trekkies and put them on that ship and sent them into space, within a week or a month, it wouldn't be like the show. The frailties and flaws of man that are still alive and well inside Trekkies, which are some good people, would surface. The pettiness of man would surface. And it's not that if we left them out there for 10 years, they wouldn't get their script on a little bit better and figure out their anomalies and perhaps evolve their thinking to a point where they are more Gene Roddenberry and they are more balanced, right? But I think that our current dependencies as man, our short attention span, our constant looking at our cell phone would really go in the face of what would need to be present on a ship like that to recreate that environment. And why mention that? Because I think that we are intellectually and perhaps genetically not there yet. As much as we can write episodes and act it out in a Hollywood studio and put it on television, we still aren't there yet mentally. We're impersonating what we would like to have happen. Art is still yet to become life in those areas, right? Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. If we have those people on Earth that could really pull it off fairly instantaneously, and I'm sure that the opinions would differ too about what Gene Roddenberry meant by various charters of the show. And of course, he died early in the 90s and it was taken over, and the majority of Star Trek episodes were created without his supervision. But I think brilliantly maintained the charter of what his original vision was. I would say that anyone that could walk into that scenario and not mess it up would be the elders of our generation, regardless of how old they are. If you could pull it off, you'd be special. If you're awake, then you know that there's a ton of crap that we have to get right. A ton of flaws that we have to re-engineer inside ourselves. You know, as I haven't said in a while, but you know, the goal of this show is to speed up that process, to get us thinking again in every area of everything. And as a byproduct of listening to any one of the ideas I put in one of these shows, you are thinking about things I haven't covered at all. And you're refining your thoughts, and you're becoming hopefully more peaceful, more educated. And again, it's not any type of formal diploma on the wall educated. It's in the area of education that we really, really, really need. You know, and I hate to even put a category around it, but I know that one of those categories would be how we treat each other. This whole problem that we're in right now is that we have too many people passing the buck. Propaganda makes it really easy to pass the buck, doesn't it? We have cancer in this world that was completely invented by man, but we have just grown to accept it because we have stupid catchphrases like, everybody dies of cancer. Everything causes cancer. I got a friend of mine who just consumes cancerous stuff on a daily basis, and every single time I note, hey, well, you know, I don't mean to, you know, I'm not telling you to change your life, but that if you're going to complain later that you got cancer, it's because of that shit you've been eating or drinking or whatever. And then the rebuttal is, well, I guess just everything in my life causes cancer. Everything I do is wrong. That's what they always say. Everything I do is like, well, that's not what I said. And what are you trying to do here? Are you trying to be offended or something so that I back off the advice that maybe you living a long, healthy life is a thing that you might want in this world, right? And I just want to say for the newcomers who are beautifully concerned about me smoking cigars, please do watch the episode on cigars. It barely has any views. It was this season. Can't remember what episode. But it will it'll wake you up to what these things are and what they're not. I don't inhale any of this stuff, okay? The guys who smoked 18 cigars a day tend to make it to between 90 and 100 years old. One of the oldest men in America, I think he's the oldest man in America. I think he's about 111. I think he smokes, I don't know, over a dozen cigars a day, you know? Again, so if you don't inhale, there's a lot of dangers that you avoid. You can't inhale these things. They would kill you if you did. I think you feel me. I'd be interested in your comments on what you would do with NASA. Forget anything I've said in this episode. Start from scratch. You know, if you have to, just number it. Just say, look, first thing we need to do is this. How would you divide it up? What would be the objectives? If you want to get rid of a space program altogether, then why? What do we do with all the junk that's in space? You know, should we create a program that drags all that junk out of the sky? So we'd have a bunch of particles up there, you know? If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. There's video, audio, locked Facebook group, and Patreon. Always appreciate you guys stopping by. If you've always been an audio listener and you've never watched the videos, there's no reason why you have to see me talk in black and white, but it does provide a mechanism for you guys to comment, and so I definitely welcome you guys aboard because I know a lot of you have epiphanies while you're listening to the show that have nothing to do with what I've said, or they're much better takes on life than what I have been able to construct in these episodes, so I want to hear what you have to think. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over and out.